Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. If you spent any time in seminars or workshops during farm meeting season, or, you know, if you've read any of our publications in the last 10, 15 years, you've probably heard or read a lot about how the future of farming is in the data that you collect from your operation. It's in your yield maps, your soil tests, your bin monitors, coverage from drones and satellites and GPS. I could go on and on here, but I don't want to. The fact of it is, you've got the capability now, or at least the opportunity, to gather data from probably every plant in your field. But herein lies the next big challenge, making it all pay. Jennifer Blair is a reporter with Alberta Farmer. She's back from the recent AgSmart conference in Olds, and she joins us now. Jennifer, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you spoke to some farmers at this conference who have hit a bit of a wall with all the data they're collecting from their equipment for several reasons. Let's start with compatibility of platforms.
Sure. You know, I think that was the thing that I heard most about at the AgSmart event. That it's great that this equipment and all of these new tools are collecting data, but the data isn't really very useful to the average farmer if it's not being used to drive decision making. Mm-hmm. And so one of the biggest barriers to adoption of these new tools is that they don't always talk to each other seamlessly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suspect it's a bit like being in a foreign country where you don't speak the language. You might be able to get your point across and you might even know a few words or phrases, but you're not about to get into a serious conversation or debate with anyone there.
I can totally relate. As someone who regularly has to try and get photos and video off of an Android phone onto an old Mac computer, that's a subject near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's essentially the same with this new technology. It's largely missing that link that can translate between the two different platforms. And until that translation happens quickly and easily, farmers are going to continue to be frustrated with some of this technology.
Mm-hmm. And one of your featured farmers has gotten into Climate Field View, and he says this seemed to be some help.
Yeah, you know, I've heard anecdotally that Climate Field View is one tool that's doing a pretty good job of getting all of these different platforms to talk to each other. But, you know, as new tools and new platforms and new programs come online, that's going to need to continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke to one gentleman also whose platforms were turning into such a Tower of Babel that way that he's actually gone ahead and built his own to try and bring all this disparate data together.
Yeah, it's true. You know, a farmer named Larry Williams here near Airdrie launched a tool called CropBox with his three business partners earlier this year because he was so fed up by the lack of cooperation between the platforms he was using. You know, it's still a new tool, so I'm not sure that it's been fully optimized yet. But essentially, CropBox was designed to replace all of the spreadsheets and programs that farmers might be using to run their operations. So it tracks inventory, production information, crop shares, insurance claims, you know, financial records, pretty much everything a farmer would really need to manage their own operation.
Mm-hmm. What has there been any uptake on this from other farmers as far as how this is working for them?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it is relatively new. I think they just launched it for other farmers this spring. So yeah, we'll definitely be checking back with him to see how it's working out for them.
Mm-hmm. And there was an interesting deal announced just the other day, too, in which CNH, they're the owner of Case in New Holland, they announced they were buying AgDNA. They're an open platform, cloud-based software system supposed to help people gather all that disparate data from different sources in one place. So it sounds like more than a few of the majors are also aware of this issue now, too. But making this data pay, I mean, repurposing it in a usable form, it's actually become an academic question, too, isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, right now at the Olds College Smart Farm, they're conducting research on the multitude of platforms that are in the marketplace right now. So, you know, obviously that work is still ongoing, but so far, you know, they haven't really found one system or one platform that rises above the rest. There's really no one-size-fits-all solution that's going to work for everyone. So, you know, each tool has its strengths and weaknesses, and ultimately it's going to be up to each individual farmer to find a solution that works for them.
Mm-hmm. And some of the speakers at this conference, too, it sounds like they also warned that much like everyone else who's exposed to data and statistics all day, farmers can run the risk of overthinking the data that they get, that they're receiving.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we've all heard that correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's something to keep in mind when collecting and analyzing farm data. You know, just because the divorce rate in Maine rises and falls with the per capita consumption of margarine in the state doesn't really mean that marriages are ending over the debate between butter and butter substitutes. You know, it just means that data is like any other tool. Making it work largely depends on the user. So if you're seeing trends in your data that logically don't make sense, you know, it's worth a second look or a second set of eyes to make sure that you're not trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the one hand, producers have got access to all this data to make decisions, but in other respects, there's a possibility, too, that they might not have enough data?
Yeah, it's a complicated issue because, you know, typically farmers are looking at data from their own operations to make decisions based on their own conditions and experiences. And, you know, that's not entirely a bad thing, that the data is local and relevant, and it's important to consider when you're using data to make decisions. But, you know, there's also a lot of value in data aggregation, so having shared data with lots of operations over a wider geographic area. I think, you know, one good example is farmers simply can't try every new variety or product on the marketplace. So aggregated data can help farmers evaluate the performance of something that they haven't tried on their own farms yet. You know, that's why things like regional variety trials are so vital to farmers every year. And that's just one example of where it can kind of pay off to have data from more than one operation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for anyone out there who's lost all hope and is now keeping all their numbers in a shoebox, you also encountered folks from one Saskatchewan farm who've managed to master this data, and not just the field data either.
Yeah, so I have to say that Heber Grain Ventures in Saskatchewan really seems to have cracked the code on putting farm data to work for them. Mm-hmm. They're using data at every point in their strategic plan to kind of run more efficiently and effectively. And that includes in their staff hiring, training, and retention. This was the thing I think I was most surprised about and most excited about during their presentation. You know, so for instance, when they hire new employees on, they have that employee fill out a Myers-Briggs personality test, as well as create a list of the tasks that they love doing, tasks they don't really mind doing, and tasks that they hate doing. So they figure, you know, as anybody who's grown up on a farm would probably relate, they figure that everyone would list rock picking as a task that they hated, that they just didn't want to do at all. But it turns out that their bookkeeper loves picking rocks. It gets her out of the office. She doesn't really want to run equipment. So now she's quite happily a rock picker as well as a bookkeeper.
Where do I get a bookkeeper
and, you know,
like that?
And it's so interesting how they've used just a little piece of data to kind of fine-tune their operations in that way. And they're doing it across the board. They're doing it in their fields. They're doing it in their hiring. They're doing it in staff retention. It's really remarkable to hear everything that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And the example of the soil moisture probes from your article was interesting too. How the farm was using that data to seed and to fertilize its top performing fields more efficiently.
Yeah. So what they've done there is really quite interesting. So back in 2018, which as everybody probably remembers was a pretty dry year across much of the prairies, Heber Grain Ventures invested in soil moisture probes to make the most of the limited rainfall that they were getting. So at the time, they were sitting at about 40% of their average rainfall, and most of their neighbors had decided not to waste money on top dressing nitrogen on a crop that probably wouldn't yield very well anyway. But Heber Grain looked at their 30-year average rainfall and figured that the probability of rain in the next month was quite high. And from their soil moisture probes, they learned that there was still 11 inches of water in the ground. So they decided to risk it and top dress 30 pounds of N. And that gamble paid off. They yielded, I think it was 11 bushels an acre more than their test strips, plus their protein shot up from 12% to about 14%, earning them a premium. So in the end, their net return was about 160 an acre because of the data that they got from their soil moisture probe. But the really interesting thing about Hebert is, you know, they're quick to point out that you don't necessarily need all these fancy gadgets to put data to work on the farm. You know, one of the best sources of data on the farm is financial statements, and just about every farm has those.
So it sounds like even for all the concerns that are out there with gathering data and with just gathering all this information, that there are ways to make it work. There are ways to make it pay, and this is something to definitely keep an eye on going forward. Jennifer, thanks very much for your time, and thanks very much for coming on Between the Rows. Well, the biggest outdoor agricultural trade show in Canada is coming up fast. Canada's Outdoor Farm Show runs September 10th, 11th, and 12th in Oxford County near Woodstock, Ontario. This year hosting about 750 exhibitors and an expected turnout of about 40,000 people. The big show this year is also geographically bigger. Here to talk about that and other features this year, we've got show president Doug Wagner on the phone. Mr. Wagner, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Well, thank you.
Now, let's start with the show's geographic footprint this year. Glacier Media, the owner of the show, and in the interest of full disclosure, the owner of our publications, has invested in more land at the show site?
That is correct. We had the opportunity last fall to purchase the property on the north side of the show site. We've been renting land from the farmer that rented the land from the landowner for the last 7 or 8 years, and she decided to move to a simpler living. So she put the farm up for sale, and I know she was absolutely delighted, and so were we that we were able to purchase the farm from her last November. So yes, that has secured us parking for the show going forward, as well as it offers some other opportunities for activities that our exhibitors can use that property for.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any specific plans in mind apart from the parking for the show this year?
Well, actually, we have a few interesting things going on. One of our larger crop protection exhibitors is hosting a VIP event for some of their some of their clients. The property actually features a 48 woodlot and about a 40-acre woodlot and about a 7-acre pond, and it's just an absolutely beautiful little gem right in the middle of nowhere, because when you're out there you really can't see anything around you except trees and water, so it's actually quite unique. So this particular company chose that spot to host their clients to a probably pretty special evening next Tuesday night. And then secondly, another interesting thing that we've been able to use that property for is the Woodstock Police a few years ago asked about using our show site here to train their police dogs. And over the years, we've had up to 9 police forces from London to Hamilton to Brampton, all come, and the Ministry of Natural Resources all come to our farm show site and use our farm show site for training their police dogs. And they have now set up actually a little bit more of a permanent training. I'm not sure if facility is the word to use, but they have a 1-acre parcel land on this new property where they put their dogs through some extra special training. So that's been kind of a nice, neat thing that we've been able to help out with here in the community as well.
Oh, very nice. And I'm looking at the list also of field and equipment demos that you've got planned for this year. It looks like you'll need all the room you can get just for that. But you've also got a special guest piece of equipment coming into the show for the first time this year. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, actually, this piece of equipment was introduced for the very first time at our sister show, Ag in Motion, in Langley, Saskatchewan, in July 2017. It's actually an autonomous power unit named DOT, and DOT. They named it DOT after the grandmother of the seat, the Fend with an Own Seed Master, which is kind of neat. So we all just call it DOT, but it is an autonomous power platform that we'll be introducing here into Eastern Canada. And of course, this is a game changer for agriculture. This one machine is all by itself, changes implements depending on what the field operation is, goes up to the field, does your operation, comes back in and either refuels or refills with seed or crop protection materials, heads back out to the field and does another section of the field, or comes back in and completely changes implements. Example, from a seed drill to a sprayer, or a seed drill to a fertilizer spreader, and then to a seed drill, and is able to do all those all those operations on its own. And of course, I think the real savings here is that over time, I expect one person can be running two or three or four of these units all at once and covering one well of a pile of land at once. For Ontario, obviously not quite as big land masses as Western Canada, but I think, you know, there could be some interest from some of the farmers that are running 3,000-4,000 acres that are cash cropping, and it seems that the window for planting and harvesting crops seems to get a little shorter every year, a little bit different. It'll certainly give some of the larger farmers a opportunity to capitalize on some of this new technology that's coming their way.
Mm-hmm. And this will be the first opportunity for many Ontario farmers who haven't gone to the shows out west to see the DOT system up close. Is that correct?
That's correct. And actually, DOT has a plot of ground here, a good sized plot of ground here, where they'll actually be able to demonstrate to the farmers and the families at the show to show them exactly how it works, what it does, you know, why it's going to be of interest. And of course, everybody will be quite interested in the safety features that's part of the machine. And of course, I know they'll be explaining the safety features on this machine as well when they're here at the show. So I think it'll be quite fascinating for Ontario farmers to have a look at this piece of new technology.
Mm-hmm. And the daily demos that you've got going on at the show site this year, they also include a few other new segments as well. Is that, what can you tell us about those?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Every year, we try to pick some field demonstrations that would be of interest to farmers. Of course, we do go to quite a few of the larger farm meetings in the wintertime, because it's good to be there, and B, because quite a few of us have an A background and just like being there to find out what's going on ourselves. Mm-hmm. But this year, and in fact, the last couple of years, there's been a lot of discussion about, tillage crops or tilling cover crops for, to increase soil health, to increase soil tilth. So this year, our crop field demonstration advisory committee selected the tillage of cover crops is one demonstration. Then usually when that happens, they come in afterwards and fertilize. So we're doing both a cover crop demonstration and a fertilizer spreader demonstration at the show. So, and then in contrast to that, in addition to, tilling cover crops back into the soil, we're also featuring a roller crimper demonstration. And basically a roller crimper is like any, if you can picture this, a farm roller that's maybe 3 feet diameter, and it wouldn't really matter how wide it is depending on how big your equipment is, but there's bars every 6 inches on a spiral around the drum, and it is built to roll over ripened crops, and it will actually break the stems to the point where the plant is now starting to decay and will work itself into the soil, and again, that's an alternate to building soil health, not using tillage as the tool to get the cover crop incorporated back into the soil.
Mm-hmm. And getting back also to the DOT system for a second, DOT's CEO is also coming to the show. He's going to be a featured guest at the Farmtario Knowledge Tent that you're running this year as well.
Yes, he is. I think Rob Sykes, pretty well known right across Canada. Mm-hmm. He's certainly been a guest speaker here at several farm meetings over the years, and for sure, again, I've had the opportunity to be part of the demos at Ag in Motion this past year, and he presents a pretty good case for why this technology is so important not only to Canada but to other parts of farming around the world. And we're also welcoming some professors from the University of Guelph School of Environmental Sciences, and that whole group is working hard on in improving soil health, and they've got some interesting new ways of measuring soil health improvement. Some of our listeners may know Dr. Adam Gillespie. He's going to be joining mm-hmm. us. John Gregg, he's editor of Glacier Farm Media's newer Farmtario publication that comes out in Ontario now. Mm-hmm. And then through the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture and Food and Ontario Soil and Crop Improvement Association, we are going to have a panel of farmers who will be speaking about their experience with strip tillage and fertilizer management and cropping systems. And that'll dovetail with the demonstrations that are going on in the field in the morning. And then by mid-afternoon, they're going to, you know, have some farmers speak about their experience with some of these different practices and, you know, what it takes to manage them and what kind of success they've been having.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds like there's clearly no shortage of crop discussion and demos this year. What have you got lined up for livestock producers at the show?
That's another very good question. We have a real good sized livestock section of our show, probably with over 100 different exhibitors showcasing their goods and products and services to farmers. On the dairy side, this will be our 19th year for our Dairy Innovation Center. And that center is pretty unique. It features two of the fiercest competitors in the dairy industry, Lely and De Lavelle. Mm-hmm. You know, in a barn, each milking 30 cows on their newer robots. And in addition to demonstrating, you know, the robotics, that's pretty much accepted. They're also bringing all kinds of new other mechanization to the dairy industry. And of course, if you're in the livestock industry, that's a 24/7 business. And mm-hmm. I think whenever a dairy farmer, any farmer gets a chance to maybe do something that's makes your life a little bit simpler and takes some of the drudge out of some of those jobs, and they're all for it, and they can see that stuff here. We do have beef demonstrations here. I know Gallagher is a huge part of that, and they'll be talking different fencing and different ways of managing cattle or for grazing. We have a sheep, goat, swine are represented here, and poultry. I mean, there's been lots of work on new caging systems for poultry, and some of that will be on display here. The sheep handling is going to be focusing on body conditioning, and of course sheep producers are going to want to know how to score their body conditioning, so this demonstration is going to teach them how to do that. Dairy day is Thursday at our show, and we always welcome about 700-800 dairy farmers and their families to our show on Wednesday morning, and a group of exhibitors treat them to a brunch, and then of course they're on the show site here to visit again these 100 exhibitors that could have some innovative products or improvements to products that they're already using that might be of interest on their farm. Mm-hmm. Then of course next to the Dairy Innovation Center, we talked about that, the Grover Young Animal Development Center. They've been here with us now 11 years. Grover always says they feed anything with lips. So if there's any animal anywhere in the world, if the owners of that animal, or if it's something out of the ocean and it can't be fed, Grover will send people to come up with a diet that hopefully those species will eat. At our show here, they take advantage of demonstrating all of the different animals they feed with milk replacer, and they're demonstrating methods of how to feed, how to make that task easier. And that's all going on in the Young Animal Development Center. Mm-hmm. And then of course, there's quite a few, companies that, you know, sell goods and services, you know, to farmers, from financial to, you know, to, you name it, ventilation, that are in our pavilions. And we're quite pleased this year that TD has come on as our Dairy Producer Pavilion sponsor, and along with Farm Ontario. And so lots of interesting people to talk to in those larger livestock and dairy pavilions located close to the dairy section.
So it sounds like there's more than enough for everybody to take in, but you've also got some online tools to help people manage their visit.
Oh yeah, for sure. We've got two things going on, along with quite a few other farm shows in North America. We do subscribe to a program called Map Your Show, and we use that to set the show up. And some of the offshoots of that are that people that are coming to the show can take a look at that, and they can pre-plan who they really want to see that day, and that app will help them around the show site. And and a second one that was kind of neat, it's been created by students for SAS Polytech in Saskatoon. They also have created a mobile guide that could be downloaded onto the screen. And it's probably a little bit more detailed than the previous map you're showing, but it'll help you walk. It will give you walking directions to demonstrations, like where the people move the routes, where can I find ATMs, where the food vendors, and that sort of stuff. So that has to have been a real neat challenge for students, that we're actually creating something that's actually getting used in the field right when they're still students. And we've been able to give them quite a bit of support through Glacier, Farm Media, Mitix Canada, and NSERC. So I know that technology is improving every year, and for those people that use it, I'm sure they will find that to be a very useful tool to get them around the show site in a pretty efficient manner.
Mm-hmm. Well, no doubt. And Glacier Farm Media, of course, will be there next week as well. Spencer Myers, our producer, is going to be hosting the show on site next week, so we'll be looking forward to hear what he has to say. Mr. Wagner, thanks for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Anytime. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Doug Wagner is president of Canada's Outdoor Farm Show at Woodstock, Ontario. For more information on next week's events, visit outdoorfarmshow.com. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Well, Statistics Canada last week let loose its first production estimates for the 2019-2020 crop year. One would maybe expect this information to make waves in grain markets, but instead, so far, at least from where I'm sitting, it's been shrugs of indifference. We've got Bruce Burnett here from Markets Farm to talk about that and so much more. Bruce, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Good to be here.
So StatsCan's report last week landed with kind of a thud. Seems like the numbers were already sort of what the trade was expecting.
Actually, they were probably even a little bit smaller than what the trade was expecting, especially for canola, but also for the wheat crops. We had anticipated a larger barley crop year on year, and certainly saw that in the report. But I think part of the issue here is that the report, although it was just last week, was really based on a survey in July, and a lot of things have changed since July. So certainly the market's trying to muddle its way through that. In terms of important statistics in the whole scheme of things here, I think we'd probably be looking more at the November report as a market mover than any of these other reports that we get for Statistics Canada.
And that's the next major one coming out in the November report? Or?
Yes, there's a September report in a couple of weeks that's based on remote sensing, but it's not until the November report, which is actually, I do believe, released in December. So certainly, I think everybody's going to be taking stock of this. Concern, I think, is still related to the weather and some of the lateness of the crop as well in the mix. So I think there's still a lot of uncertainty despite the Statistics Canada numbers.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, as you said, the grain trade is both here in Canada and down in Chicago and Minneapolis. They're mainly watching the skies.
Yes, that's right. Certainly the weather for the North American end of season here essentially is going to be determine what kind of crop size that we eventually do have and what kind of quality, certainly more importantly, maybe that the farmers are going to have to market this year.
Mm-hmm. I've been seeing reports that some farmers down in the States were actually kind of upset with the numbers that they were seeing being the official numbers that they were seeing being reported, because it didn't seem to accurately reflect at least the situation that they thought they saw on the ground.
Yes. Again, this is all about methodology and what happens during the report series in the U.S. That series is essentially determined for August, at least anyway. It was determined by a farmer survey of what they thought yields were going to be. And so those are the numbers that came out. A lot of farmers felt that the numbers were a bit high. We also had a tour by Pro Farmer, a newsletter based in the U.S. that extensively went through the Midwest and came up with a number that was lower than USDA's. But I've also seen a lot of people on Twitter and other places disparage those results as well because they think the yield should be a little bit lower. They came with up with a result from that tour, at least anyway, of a yield in the low 160s for corn, which is, I think, fairly reasonable given the growing conditions to date. But as I said earlier, a lot depends on the weather when we go through September here and when we do get frosts in certain areas of North America.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, of course, as far as the big weather story right now, I mean, there's Hurricane Dorian down in the States and whatnot, but like just still over the main growing areas, are there any weather stories that traders are keeping an eye on?
Well, I think again, aside from frost, everything else has been a little bit cooler than normal throughout the central parts of the continent, really. And so we saw a cool August in Western Canada, and we've seen a cool August in parts of the Midwest of the U.S. And that slowed crop development a little bit. Again, when the crop is already behind normal, that's not what you want to see. So there, it is pushing the maturity dates of all sorts of crops. Again, in Western Canada, some of the earlier crops we're into harvest now across the southern prairies doesn't have as obviously as big an impact, although those crops are coming off about a couple of weeks after or later than you normally would. So things like lentils and peas and winter wheat. As we move into the heart of the spring wheat harvest, though, we're going to start to see those delays, and especially up in the northern grain areas, grain growing areas, where we still need a lot of heat units yet to get those crops mature.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, I can't let a report go by with, or let a market report go by without mentioning the China situation. From what I'm reading, you know, commodities traders down in the States are still, you know, setting store by any news about or any even possibility of news about trade talks between China and the U.S. You know, I thought that there had been some level of Twitter fatigue that had set in, but there still seems to be a lot of optimism or pessimism out there, depending on what's going on any given day.
Yes, certainly. Here, just right after the long weekend in September, prior to that, we'd seen a few reports about maybe there was going to be a last minute reprieve on these new tariffs that were going to come out from both sides, from China and the U.S., and, mm-hmm. and that didn't happen. So certainly, I think if you look at this from a longer term point of view, I think it's very difficult to see an agreement happen here before 2020. So I think we're going to see just a continuation of this brief periods of optimism dashed by the cold, harsh reality that nothing's getting done. There were some reports today, actually, that there was difficulties in agreeing to meet, in other words, find an appropriate time to meet, as well as the agenda between the two parties. So when you're that far away from discussing issues, I think it's very, very difficult to come up with an agreement in a very quick manner, unless both parties suddenly feel that they need to get an agreement right away. And I don't have that sense on either side.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be keeping an eye on that and several other factors certainly in the weeks to come. Bruce, thanks very much for your time and for coming on Between the Rows.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this week, but we'll be back next week with more from Glacier Farm Media's family of publications. I'd like to thank our guests, Jennifer Blair, Doug Wagner, and Bruce Burnett. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to etr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.